Jai Vishwam Sabadarajakajai Stodajatasisimad Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai Vishwam Sabadarajakajai Stodajatasisimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sajidakur Prabhupada Ki Go Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 7, Further Inquiries by Vidura, Text 21. Shrishtva Gre Mahat Adini Savvikaranya Nukramat Tebhyo Virajam Udhritya Tammanu Pravashad Vibhu Shrist Bhagre Mahat Adini Savikaranya Nukramat Tebhyo Virajam Udhritya Tammanu Pravashad Vibhu Shrishtva Gre Mahat Adini Savakaranya Nukramat Tebhyo Virajam Udritya Tamanu Pravishad Vibhu. Vaishnavis. Shrishtva, after creating, Agre, in the beginning, Mahat Adini, the total material energy. Savakarani, along with the sense organs. Anukramat, by a gradual process of differentiation. Tebya, out of that. Virajam, the gigantic universal form. Udhritya, manifesting. Tam, unto that. Anu, later. Pravishat, entered. Vibhu, the supreme. Translation. After creating the total material energy, the Mahatattva, and thereby manifesting the gigantic universal form with senses and sense organs, the Supreme Lord entered within it. Purport. Fully satisfied by the answers of the sage Maitreya, Vidura wanted to understand the remaining portions of the creative function of the Lord, and he took the clue from the previous topics. We'll go to text 22 also, and I'll explain later why. Yamahu ajam purusham sahasrang yuru bahulkam yatra vishva ime loka savikasham ta asate. Translation. The Purusha incarnation lying on the causal ocean is called the original Purusha in the material creations, and in his Virat form, in whom all the planets and their inhabitants live, he has many thousands of legs and hands. Purport. The first Purusha is Garanadakshayi Vishnu. The second Purusha is Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And the third Purusha is Chirodakshayi Vishnu, in whom is contemplated the Virat Purusha, the gigantic form in which all the planets, with their different developments and inhabitants, are floating. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a very personal chapter of the very personal Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidura is inquiring from Maitreya, and in this chapter, he expresses his dedication to Maitreya's lotus feet. He expresses how the material world is such a bewildering, illusory place, but by serving the lotus feet of Maitreya, the guru, Vidura says, I'm confident I can see through all the hallucinations, all the illusions, and not only see through them, but give them up. Often devotees wonder, oh, Maya is so strong, how will I ever stay out of it for long? Maybe I'm just trying to hold on in vain. But we can take strength from Vidura's glorification of Maitreya. It's so rare, he says, to have a personality like you. And he expresses to Maitreya synopsises, summaries of what Maitreya has been telling him. That's the sign of good listening. You've told me this, and you've told me that, and now I understand this, and now I understand that. A major point of this chapter is the distinction between the jiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada writes in one purport in this chapter that this is actually a subtle point. This qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, yet quantitatively different. And not only that, but how is it that the spirit soul becomes entangled in material nature? is the spirit soul actually polluted? Or is it simply the surroundings of the spirit soul that originate the pollution, and the spirit soul, by an inconceivable arrangement, the spirit soul submits to illusion because the jiva is so tiny? This is a hard point for us to accept, how tiny we are, because living in material life, in the material, gives you a false sense of empowerment. I can do it. Just let me try harder. If I don't get it this time, I'll get it the next time. So to accept that we are so tiny and that we can be overpowered by the illusory energy is not very easy. Somehow or other, we have this false belief in our own strength and intelligence. And you can see that disease has plagued human society to the max. And the problems of the day are all evidence of that. How human beings have become expert at destroying their own lives, physically and psychologically, and destroying the world. All while having pride in human prowess, human achievement. So to accept that we can be so easily overpowered by the illusory energy because we're so tiny, Vidura says that this is not an easy point, because even you can try to become a transcendentalist as an impersonalist, and you'll understand you're not the body, you'll understand you're not the mind, but you think that you are Brahman, Brahman is you, and that's the end of it. No question of subordination, no question of admitting to your tiny status that because of being so tiny and making the wrong choice, we were overwhelmed by the illusory energy. So this point, Vidura brings up to Maitreya again and again with gratitude. Now I understand it's the material energy that's causing the quivering, the shakiness. That shakiness, that quivering is not inherent in the pure spirit soul. Srila Prabhupada gave one example when he visited Gainesville, Florida, and devotees were asking him, in rendering devotional service, do the modes of material nature affect the devotee? And so Prabhupada gave the example of a boat on a lake, and you're standing in the boat. The waves of the lake, stirred up by the wind, cause the boat to rock. But actually the waves are never touching you. But because you identify with the shaking of the boat, you think that that's you. This is the mercy of Maya, that you identify with what you're not, and then you're filled with fear, artificial desires, all kinds of complexities that push on your material existence. So it's very important in this chapter how Vidura establishes, based on hearing from Maitreya, that the pure soul is always pure consciousness and never out of pure consciousness. Never mind the circumstances, never mind the external situations, they actually have nothing to do inherently, essentially, with the pure spirit soul. But we've identified with matter and its actions and reactions. By the mystic arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entities, Tattvastha Shakti, the marginal potency, has become overwhelmed by the external potency. The potencies never overwhelm the source, the potent. they never overwhelm Krishna and his expansions, but because we are so tiny, we can be influenced in the wrong way. Perhaps an example is like children. They're easily influenced. And for the guardians, if they have good parents, are always careful. Who are my children associating with? What are they watching on social media or TV or whatever? Understanding that children, just like the classic example of a stranger offering a child some candy, come in the car with me, I have some nice candy for you. And of course, everyone knows the child will go for it, unless the child has had stern lessons from the parents. If a stranger ever comes to you with candy, don't take it. Maybe your parents raised you in that way. As tiny spirit souls, we're easily influenced. And Vidura wants to make that point clear. He wants you to be able to see where the blame is. And he doesn't want you to consider wrongly that there's something within the pure spirit soul that is defective. So this is a very important chapter in establishing that, as well as establishing devotion to the guru. Vidura says, I'm sure that by serving the lotus feet, I'll be able to get over this illusion. I'll be able to give it up. I'm sure. So Vidura is imparting that confidence. This is very personal. And now he wants to clarify various factors about the creation. He's, in some cases, repeating back, as we said, he's repeating back to Maitreya to encourage Maitreya. I've heard this, I've heard that. You've talked about this, you've talked about that. Now, can we clarify these points even more? In this way, Bhagavatam is such a personal support, such a personal friend, such a personal counselor to us all. So we get some information encapsulated about the creation. And we hear about the Purusha avatars. You may recall from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sanatan Siksha, when Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatan Goswami, he talks about the Purusha avatars, he talks about the guna avatars. He talks about all the different appearances of the Supreme Personality Godhead. And then Sanatan Goswami gets a little tricky. He says, you've talked about the incarnations for the various ages. Can you talk about the incarnation for this age? And Lord Chaitanya changes the subject very quickly. So this avatar katha talks about the avatars is expanded upon very greatly in Sri Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which we do have a very erudite BBT version of that work by Rupa Goswami, translated by Gopi Pranadana Prabhu with commentaries by Baladev Vidyabhushan. So Laghu Bhagavatamrita is like the handbook of the incarnations. It goes into all the details. How is it that Mahavishnu, the Purusha avatar, wanted to see Krishna in Dwarka? This whole incident, you may recall from Krishna Leela, of the Brahmana's sons, 9 sons, 10 sons, disappearing, dying. And then the Brahmana goes to Ugrasena, the king of Dwarka, and blames him. What kind of king are you? Son after son of mine, every year is dying. There must be something defective in your administration. as chief executive, you're responsible for the peacefulness and well-being of all your citizens. Yet year after year, my wife is giving birth and the child is dying. So I think many of you are familiar with that pastime, yes? But what about the ins and outs? Did you ever wonder, how could it be that such a catastrophe was happening in Dwarkadom? Child after child was dying to a Brahmana, born to a Brahmana of Dwarka? There must be something else going on here. And why was this Brahmana so loudly and even arrogantly berating Ugrasena, the king? Indeed, the acharyas say the Brahmana was being a bit loud-mouthed, which is, a Brahmana is not supposed to be. So what's going on? The super soul in his heart was urging him to do this, to create a scene. This is teamwork between the super soul in the heart of the Brahmana and Mahavishnu, reclining on Anantashesh, on the causal ocean. Mahavishnu wanted to see Krishna. So you know, Arjuna presented himself before the Brahmana. There may be no Kshatriyas around competent, but you can count on me. And so Arjuna told the Brahmana, next time your wife's about to give birth, let me know. And I assure you, without a doubt, that the child will be born safely. That means Arjuna was around in Dwarka at least for a year. Because for another child to be conceived and be born, he stuck around for that. So as you know from the Krishna book, when the 10th child was about to be born, the Brahmana calls Arjuna, you spoke so boldly and assuredly. Okay, here's the situation. My wife's about to give birth. So Arjuna came and he surrounded the birthplace, the house, with all kinds of protective arrows, mantras. The child was born and then disappeared. And of course, the Brahmana berated being a loudmouth, berated Arjuna. Oh, I shouldn't have listened to you. And Arjuna had even promised, if I can't protect your child, I'm going to enter into fire. This is the Kshatriya code of honor. Now Krishna has to intervene because his dear friend Arjuna is about to enter into fire. So now Krishna comes into action and says, come with me, Arjuna. Get on my chariot. We're going to find those boys, those babies that have disappeared, that have died. And as you know, they search everywhere. First of all, the abode of Yamaraj. They search throughout all the esoteric and subtle realms of the universe. And then they decide to go outside the universe. And so they penetrate the 8 coverings of the universe. And finally, they get to the causal ocean, to the abode of Mahavishnu. You remember how the horses leading, the Vaikuntha horses pulling Krishna's chariot, trembled at the darkness of the coverings of the universe. How can Vaikuntha horses have a problem? But this is Krishna adding drama to the Leela. We're on a dangerous mission. We're going deep into the unknown. And so the horses tremble and hesitate. Everything is Leela. Krishna knows how to act to attract your consciousness. So they get to the abode of Mahavishnu. And here you see that Krishna is so exclusive, he can arrange that even his own expansions don't know something that he does or can't even see him. This is very surprising. Let's go back to chapter 13 of the 10th canto, when Balaram can't figure out what Krishna's doing. For 1 year, Balaram didn't notice what was going on in Vrindavan, that his brother Krishna had replaced all the missing calves and cowherd boys, and Krishna had become them, assuming their individual characteristics perfectly. So for 1 year, as you know, the older cowherd ladies were loving that particular son that Krishna had replaced. They were loving him just like they loved Krishna. They had always been thinking, Mother Yashoda loves Krishna so much. If Krishna were my child, I'd love him too. So Krishna gave them their chance. He replaced the missing cowherd boys so that each mother, elderly gopi, had the chance to love Krishna as her son. But they didn't know it. And you know about the cows and the calves. No one noticed in Vrindavan that for 1 year, not only were the older gopi mothers loving their son like he was Krishna, but the cows were giving more favor to the calves that Krishna had replaced than to their newborn. Which, if you know anything about dairy farms and agriculture, which most city people don't, is highly unusual. How can a mother cow, when she has a newborn calf, give all her attention to an older calf? But the older calves were Krishna. But all this is going on in Vrindavan for 1 year, and no one notices because of the covering of Yogamaya. No one means not even Balaram. He didn't notice. Krishna arranged that Balaram couldn't see what was going on. Why? Not out of any mischievous reason. Although sometimes, as you know, when it came time for the denial of eating dirt, little Krishna blamed Balaram. Mother Yashoda told Krishna, how can you say your friends are lying about your eating dirt? Even your brother Balaram says it. And of course, Krishna replied, oh, Balaram and my friends, they're all lying. They're just angry because I wouldn't play with them anymore. And then Mother Yashoda said, all right, if they're lying, the proof will be when I look into your mouth. And so Krishna thought, yes, you can look in my mouth. There are various angles that you can understand this pastime through parampara. Did Krishna actually eat dirt or not? This is really not the point. Some acharyas, they say, when you say some acharyas, Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishnu, some say he pretended to eat dirt. Others say he did eat dirt, but it had disappeared from his mouth by the time Mother Yashoda looked in. Others say Krishna's thinking, well, I'm not lying that I didn't eat dirt because everything is already in me. So in any case, it's not completely clear whether Krishna was lying or not, but that's not the point. For us and with our mundane morality, it is the point. Did he eat dirt or did he not? But the whole point is rasa. Mother Yashoda is going to get the surprise of her life. So, Krishna can mischievously say, Balaram and my friends are conspiring against me. But why did he, during the Brahma Vimohana Leela, not allow Balaram to see what was going on? Or you could say the converse. why couldn't Balaram on his own see what Krishna had done by replacing the calves and cowherd boys? But Krishna didn't want him to see. So even Balaram was covered by Krishna's yoga maya. Krishna was concerned. I don't want Balaram to know that the original cowherd boys and calves are missing, because he'll feel separation. He'll miss Sridhama, Sudama, all the cowherd boys. He's going to miss them. Krishna was with the stolen cowherd boys and calves in the form of an expansion. So they were actually never separated from Krishna. But Balaram wasn't there as an expansion, and Krishna didn't want him to know. So for 1 year, the residents of Vrindavan couldn't see what was going on. All this display of affection and love. Everyone's loving a cow and cowherd boy like he was Krishna. And then you know what finally started to change this whole drama. The cows were on top of Govardhan Hill. And then they looked down and they saw their older calves, not the newborn calves, but the older calves, which were all Krishna, herded by the cowherd boys, who were all Krishna. Actually, the cowherd boys, in one sense, had made a mistake. They had brought those calves within sight of their mothers, and therefore, on top of Govardhan Hill, when the mothers saw their older calves, who were all Krishna, they ran down Govardhan Hill to give their milk to the older calves. So that means the baby calves didn't get milk, and the villagers in Vrindavan, they didn't get their milk. So the cowherd men were very angry. They ran down Govardhan Hill after the cows. The cows had gone down Govardhan Hill so rapidly, it was like their back legs were joined together and their front legs were joined together. Their heads were high up in the air. Their tails were high up in the air. Tears were pouring from their eyes. Milk was flowing from their udders. What a scene. And then they get to the bottom of the hill, the cows, and they give all their milk to the older calves. And so the cowherd men are frustrated. This is our livelihood. We're supposed to be gopas. And look, what this is not cowherding. This is not the proper technique. What's going on here? But the cowherd men, when they get down to the bottom of the hill, they see their sons, who are all Krishna. And they begin to hug their sons, embrace their sons, smell their head, and they forget all about their anger. So Balaram is watching this, and what's going on here? Is this some kind of illusory energy? So the first covering of Maya recedes. Balaram can see there's something strange happening here. Everyone is loving a particular son as if he were Krishna, and the cows are treating their elder calves as if they were Krishna. Something's going on here. And then he begins to consider it must be some kind of energy. The question is, whose energy? Could it be Rakshasi Maya? Could it be some mystic potency by a demoness? After all, remember Putana? She came to Braj and she covered everyone. And no one could see her deadly intentions. Maybe something like that's going on. Rakshasi Maya. No, forget that. I'm Balaram. No Rakshasi can bewilder me. Well, rishis and demigods trying to show their powers in Vrindavan? I don't think they would be so arrogant to do that. What can it be? Maybe Kamsa? Maybe Kamsa's trying to infiltrate Vrindavan and disrupt Braj by getting everyone to love an imitation Krishna, and that way taking their love away from the real Krishna, divide and conquer. Maybe Kamsa's doing that. No, no, I would have detected it. So finally, he concludes, this must be the work of my brother. And even I couldn't detect it for 1 year. So then he sees, as the fourth covering of Yoga Maya recedes, he sees all these cows, rather older calves and cowherd boys, they're Krishna, my brother. Somehow or other, he's made it so that all these calves and cowherd boys are Krishna. And then he decides to ask Krishna directly about, what are you doing? But he asks Krishna to speak briefly because he doesn't want Krishna to get tired making a long explanation. So he asks Krishna, can you briefly tell me what's going on? I'm seeing all these things and I've concluded it's you. Why are you doing this? And then Krishna briefly explains that Brahma has taken away the original cowherd boys and calves, and I'm covering up the whole situation. So this is an example of how even Krishna's expansions, as intimate as Balaram, the first expansion, as you know, there's practically no difference between Krishna and Balaram, except that Krishna's dark bluish and Balaram is whitish, and Krishna likes to wear yellow cloth and Balaram likes to wear blue cloth. That's how close they are. Yet Balaram couldn't figure out what was going on. This shows you the super excellence of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. So then we go back to the Dwarka pastime. Mahavishnu is receiving obeisances from Krishna and Arjuna. Just like Krishna paid obeisances to Govardhan Hill in Govardhan Leela, the form of the Lord that appeared on top of Govardhan Hill. So now he's paying obeisances to Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu says, I just really wanted to see you. So Arjuna couldn't get that out of his mind when Krishna and Arjuna went back to Dwarka. He accepted that at first that just see the inconceivable powers of my friend Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, wanted to see Krishna, his expansion. But wait a minute. Why did Mahavishnu, if he's the original personality of Godhead, go through all this trouble making these arrangements to see Krishna? Could it be that Krishna is actually supreme? So Arjuna is thinking over the situation. And as you know, there were all kinds of reasons behind the scenes. Mahavishnu couldn't see Krishna without Krishna's permission. The Lord's own Purusha avatar can't see Swayam Bhagavan Krishna without Krishna's permission. So Mahavishnu concocted this whole scene of year after year, taking away the sons of the Brahmana. And it's excusable because he wanted to see Krishna. Now you might say, well, why didn't he send a servant to Dwarka? He's Mahavishnu. Send a servant to Dwarka and have the servant take away the Brahmana's sons. But no servant can do that, not in Dwarka. And even Mahavishnu himself, he had to rely on himself to do it. He couldn't send a servant. And he says that, I've been wanting to see you for so long. But he couldn't. You might say he's Mahavishnu. I'm lying on Anantashesha on the causal ocean. Why couldn't he see with his inconceivable, unlimited vision? Why couldn't he see Krishna in Dwarka? Can't, because Krishna didn't let him. So this is really humbling. What does it speak of us? And here we think we're so great. And the expansions of Godhead can't see Krishna without his permission. So therefore, Mahavishnu made this scene of confiscating year after year the children of the Brahmana so that Krishna would come and see him. But what about Krishna? What's Krishna thinking? I didn't really come to see Mahavishnu just because the children of the Brahmana were disappearing. If that was the case, I would have come after the first child disappeared, if I felt indebted to the Brahmana. Because Mahavishnu is calculating, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Tayacha. Krishna loves those Brahmanas. Of course, Prabhupada writes in Bhagavatam that Krishna actually likes the cows more than the Brahmanas. But in any case, Mahavishnu is thinking, I've got to somehow or other get Krishna to come see me because I can't see him on my own. So he loves the Brahmanas. Krishna loves the Brahmanas. I'll cause distress to a Brahmana and then surely Krishna will come. But from Krishna's point of view, he says it wasn't because the Brahmana's sons were taken. If that were the case, I would have come after the first child disappeared. No, the reason why I finally decided to come and see Mahavishnu is because my dear friend Arjuna was about to enter into fire. So this shows you Krishna's attachment for his devotee. So the point is that even though Mahavishnu plays such a key role in the creation of the universes, he is just an expansion of Krishna who can't understand Krishna without Krishna's permission. All right, any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, when you were describing the situation of Lord Balaram being bewildered for the different things, it could be this, it could be that, a thought came to my mind that since Boma Vrindavan is no different from Goloka Vrindavan, and right now we're seeing that many things sometimes happen in Boma Vrindavan, in earthly Vrindavan. Many different energies are going there, like these big, big rich people comes, build hotels, and other people do so many crazy things. So maybe would you like to explain what kind of, how is it that these energies are entering there and disturbing these kind of energies?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that over the dam there's a like a thin, so to speak, thin film covering. And so all that activity that you described, seeing the hotels go up and the traffic and this and that, that's all on the thin covering over the dam, the Maya covering, that prevents unqualified persons from seeing what's really going on. That's why we have the prayers by Narottam Das Thakur, Goranga Bolite Habe Pulakashiri, Akabe Nitai Chandra. And when will I get the mercy of Gauranga and Lord Nityananda? I can really see Vrindavan for what it is. So yes, on the sort of the film-like covering over Vrindavan, all on within that thin film, all those mundane activities are going on. That's the explanation of the Acharyas. And of course, Prabhupada has given us those explanations and emphasize that if you really want to see Vrindavan, as Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, you can't buy a ticket there. It's always wonderful before arriving in Vrindavan to read the prayers and attitudes of Akrura as he's entering Vrindavan, sent by Kamsa. How will Krishna know? I'm on such an evil mission to bring him back to Mathura so Kamsa can kill him. Now he'll understand my heart. He knows. How is it that I can get a chance to see Krishna and Balaram? Ah, sometimes like a piece of grass floating on the ocean, it's carried to the shore. Similarly, sometimes a conditioned soul can achieve this greatest benediction. So going to Vrindavan and seeing what goes on there is not a material journey. And of course, there's Mayapur, Gupta Braj, hidden Vrindavan. Prabhupada has given us all a chance to experience, to, according to our adhikar, according to our spiritual development. He's given us a chance to see all these personal, inconceivable abodes of the Lord. Anything else? Yes. Ah.
Thank you. Thank you for a wonderful class and absorption in Krishna Katha, Krishna Lila. There was this one little point I was going to make, and if you made it and I didn't hear it, forgive me. But the question arose is that why should Krishna want to appear like all the cowherd boys? What is his motive? They were stolen by Brahma. Well, so what? Well, so what is that if those cowherd boys did not come home, the boys, the children, are the life and soul of the mothers and the fathers. So what happened is they would die because the children were no longer there. So it was very important that Krishna manifest himself as those cowherd boys so that those mothers and fathers don't die and that they can go on having the pleasure that they normally have with their children.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. A question that I had was, Krishna's energies are clearly very inconceivable, and certainly the material energy is like that as well. And to some extent, it can be very difficult dealing with our own minds and cultivating the proper humility to see that. And so I guess I was wondering what suggestions you might have to make sure you're not getting caught up in these these energies, because they're clearly so big and hard to understand.
Well, we can take the words of Vidura that by serving... Here, I'll read it. But, my dear sir, first he talks about a verse I often quote in outreach programs, how both the lowest of fools and he who is transcendental to all intelligence enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. So then he says, but, my dear sir, I am obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I am confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. So that is bhakti. We serve the lotus feet, and in that way we receive the protection, how not to succumb to this overpowering illusion, which Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamai Mama Maya Dhritya. It's too bewildering. You're too tiny to resist unless you take strength from me and take nourishment and knowledge from me. But again, as conditioned souls, we think, I've got expertise, I've got experience. But what does Shukadeva Goswami say in second canto? Pashyanapi na pashyati. You're sufficiently experienced, no doubt, but you still don't see what's going on. So much for experience being the best teacher. Shukadeva Goswami says, in spite of your experience with Maya over countless lifetimes, you still don't understand, you don't see what's going on. This is how tiny and helpless we are. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Shubh Prabhupada Ki Jai.